from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Mina Kim. And for the rest of the hour, we're delving into a shortage of bus drivers in San Francisco. A report by the city's budget and legislative analyst this week shows that the shortage is twice as bad as the SFMTA said earlier this year. The question, of course, is why and what to do about it. Joining us are Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. He's a transportation reporter with the San Francisco Examiner. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Also here, Roger Marenko, president of the Transport Workers Union, Local 250A, represents Muni drivers generally and bus drivers as well.
Is yes, that correct? That's
correct. Yep. And joining us by phone, Paul Rose, chief spokesman for the San Francisco Municipal Transit Agency, the SFMTA. Paul, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Joe, let me begin with you. What is your sense of what was the most important thing in this report this week?
Well, you know, it's really something we've been seeing brewing for years since Muni union negotiated their contract with the city in 2014. Quite simply, the BLA said workers are not being paid adjusted with the price of living in the Bay Area, and they're fleeing. They're not staying in the job once they're trained. We're losing drivers who are trained with a Class B license, and they're taking that bus driver's license and they're driving for other transit agencies.
And when you say other transit agencies, I mean, how do the salaries, and maybe, Paul, this is a Roger, rather, this is a question for you first. You know, how do the salaries of Muni bus drivers compare with other transit agencies in the Bay Area? I mean, my understanding is the starting pay is about $22.70 an hour, which translates to about $36,000, $37,000 a year take home.
Correct. The starting wage at the moment is $22.71 per hour, and wages is definitely one of the most prominent factors as to why it's difficult to maintain Muni transit operators here in San Francisco.
But I mean, Joe is suggesting that, you know, you can go work for BART, you can go work for AC Transit, you know, and make more money. Is that accurate?
With some of the other agencies, you know, they start off at a higher rate, their percentage is higher, and it takes much less time to max out and pay.
Well, it's important to note also, you know, people are seeking a lower cost of living too. So, you know, the budget legislative analyst found that about 45% of operators don't live in San Francisco, and they're increasingly being pushed out further and further and further. I mean, if you have to drive quite a distance at, you know, 4 a.m, 5 a.m. for the morning commute, that's another factor. I mean, is the money worth it when you're having to go that far, that long, that early?
So you might as well work in the East Bay for a different transit agency, for example.
Right. And a lot of them work split shifts, too, where they're having to wait gaps in between the morning commute and a later commute in the day. You know, all those things are factors when it comes to, will we stay here?
And Paul Rose, my understanding from, I think, probably from your article, Joe, or one of the articles I read, is that there are about a little short of 1,900 full-time drivers available on a given day, but you need about 400 plus, you know, give or take more than that. Is that what your understanding is? Is that there you need, what, hire another 400 or so drivers?
To address the overall operator shortage, according to the BLA analyst, we do need to hire about 400 additional operators, but that's based on an 8-hour shift. You know, we have a lot of lines and routes that go off of a 10 to 12-hour shift, so that number might be a little less. We're thinking closer to about 250 operators that we would need to get everybody up and running and service out on the street.
And what would you add to what Roger and Joe have said about why the city is having a hard time attracting operators?
Well, the BLA report also suggested that there are some other regional and national trends that are impacting our ability to recruit operators, and those include low employment across the country, the region. The number of licensed drivers under the age of 45 have been on the decline, and there have been fewer applicants to public sector jobs. And all of those things have a real impact on our pool of operators.
You know, we heard reference to the salary and the, you know, the step-ups as well, but the benefits, we haven't talked about the benefits. How do the benefits, Paul Rose, compare with not just with other transit agencies, but with, say, the private sector?
Employees of the city and county of San Francisco receive the same amount of benefits, and they're some of the best benefits in the country. And it's one of the advantages And one of the things that we can point to when recruiting new operators is that these benefits really do benefit your quality of life, and it's something that we try to attract, get more operators here with that information.
We're talking about the shortage of bus drivers, and I should clarify, Paul, when you say operators or Roger, are we talking about bus drivers, specifically buses, or also the trains, the LRVs? I mean, is it specifically?
It encompasses all
of them. So it's all those operators. Okay. So we'd love to hear from you. I know a lot of folks, so whether you live in San Francisco or commute into the city, you use Muni. Tell us, what's your sense of the driver shortage? How does it affect your commute, your life? Give us a call. This is a half-hour segment, so we'll be taking calls now. 866-733-6786 is the number to call, 866-733-6786. Or you can email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. Joe, until a few years ago, San Francisco had an agreement, I guess you could say, that the salaries would be based on a national survey of transit operators, and that whatever the top one or two salaries were, that is what drivers, operators, Muni workers would get. And, mm-hmm. I believe that was changed by the voters.
That was changed in 2010 by Proposition G, which was actually proposed by, at the time, Supervisor Sean Ellsburn, who is now Mayor Breed's chief of staff. So very interestingly, at least, for me to watch from the sidelines, Ellsburn may have been across the negotiating table from Roger here, the very person who authored that proposition. Next year.
What is your sense, Roger, of what difference that has made, either in terms of the ability to attract operators or the actual salaries? I mean, it's only been a few years.
It's only been a few years, but it's been it's been a negative impact in the city and county of San Francisco. And the residents, the ridership, are feeling the effects of that. And I think the city and county of San Francisco, the ridership, they understand that Prop G was meant as something good or positive, but in the end, it has not worked out.
And Paul Rose, part of the issue around drivers and missing routes and being late were some of the work rules and the ability in the past for drivers to just call in sick with very little notice. To what extent have those work rules been changed to address some of those problems?
Well, we have, as part of the approved contract over the last couple of years, we have been able to implement some work rules that do allow us to have more accountability and to manage service a little bit better. Those are some of the things that, we're trying to balance the need for service for our riders and for the benefits of our operators and employees. And, we take both of those very seriously.
And Roger Marinko, what's it like to be a driver in San Francisco? I mean, I don't think a lot of us know what it's like to just drive our cars, from place to place, but to drive a huge bus through commute hours and the rest of the day in a crowded city, it's got to be stressful.
Not just stressful. It's actually one of the most difficult jobs in the city and county of San Francisco. Our lanes are 9 3/4 wide, but our buses are 10.5 feet wide. So our buses don't even fit in the lanes. So it's absolutely difficult, especially nowadays, given the fact that you have Uber, Lyft, we have all these new scooters, scoots, etc. I mean, it's just absolutely difficult. It's not just about being a Muni transit operator. The operator turns himself or herself into a teacher, into a guidance counselor, into a professional conflict manager, everything, babysitter, everything. You turn yourself into everything once you're on the bus.
And so their responsibility, if there's a fight or some disturbance on the bus, they're expected to resolve that or deal with that in some way.
That's right.
Yeah. And what effect does that have on, it's almost a rhetorical question. I mean, it's got to be stressful. It's got to be, you're kind of in a no-win situation, I would imagine.
Yeah, a few days ago when we had the hearing at City Hall, there was a young lady who gave testimony about the fact that she was sexually assaulted, and that affects you and affects her tremendously. I mean, she's been off of work for several weeks now, and she has to deal with that and domestically at her house, and it's just it's awful. It's terrible.
Joe?
Frankly, that wasn't the first time that she was even assaulted. That was the third time she was assaulted. We did a story on her 2 years ago when she was punched in the face by a driver who almost hit her on the street while she was trying to adjust her trolley poles above the bus to go back on the lines. Guy nearly hit her, gets out the car, is so angry at her that they get in a fist fight.
And Paul, I know that the buses are supposed to have and the trains are supposed to have cameras, right? I mean, to what extent are they being operated? And obviously, if what you described, Joe, happened outside, so there was no camera there probably. But, you know, to what extent is there security for the drivers on these buses?
Yeah, and this is another issue we take very, very seriously. We have about 10 or 12 cameras per vehicle, and we do have cameras that point outside, so we can capture some of the incidents that occur right outside the vehicle. But we've also been working, you know, with the union and with our operators on the design of the new vehicles to help develop the new enclosures that you see on our buses. You know, we've added silent alarm systems to our vehicles. We have a new radio system to better communicate with our control centers. We have a specific work group set up to come up with new ideas to keep our operators safer.
All right, let's go to some of our listener comments here. Kurt asks, does Muni recruit heavily abroad? I don't know about that, Paul Rose. I assume that means not just outside of California, but outside the country. It would be hard to imagine that happening.
Yeah, we're open to all new ideas at this point, because that's the main challenge right now is the recruitment of operators.
So it's gotten to that point where you consider, advertising in Canada or Mexico or Joe, you got your finger.
You know, there's an interesting suggestion from MTA board director Cheryl Brinkman just, you know, this past Tuesday in the board meeting. She was like, she mentioned that she was in recruitment classes, recent recruitment classes, and she didn't see a lot of women. And she was asking for MTA to increase its outreach to women so that perhaps they could increase their pool of operators by having women-focused outreach and women-focused classes.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Erin in San Francisco, you're first. Welcome.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm a therapist working in Bayview, and I've worked with families now for a long time that work from uni, and they've expressed not only are the working hours really hard, and demanding on a family, but there's a pecking order and the hierarchy within the system. And, you know, calling in sick is really difficult, and then the testing is really extensive. So it's not just a job that it appears you can sign up for and, you know, within 12 weeks start working. It's a really extensive training and really hard and demanding on families and doesn't allow for a whole lot of wiggle room. So I just wanted to express that maybe there's something you guys can do.
When you say there's a hierarchy, what do you mean by that?
Just like, you know, working, getting the hard shifts, like the graveyard shifts first, you know, working your way up to like the daytime shifts or working your way up to having hours off accrued. So just, it's really, really hard on parents to have this kind of a job when they have kids and have to pick up from school and also don't have resources to do that kind of stuff.
All right,
so,
got it. Erin, thanks so much for calling in with that. I appreciate it. And let me put that to you, Roger. I mean, what she's describing, I guess, is seniority, right? In terms of the ability to get the preferential, the preferred shifts?
Right. Oftentimes when you start off, you are oftentimes required to start off at the night shift. And she mentioned an interesting word, graveyard shift, right? That's one of the most difficult times to work, the graveyard shift. Now, I heard a rumor that supposedly that the MTA was planning on shifting the hours of graveyard so that the graveyard operators started at maybe 11 o'clock at night or midnight. That's something that the union will never budge with.
What is it now?
Right now, a graveyard, the owl operators start at approximately 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. But if the hours were shifted to 11 or midnight, that would create a serious health and safety issue.
Well, and that raises a question. The current contract, Roger, expires in the coming year. Is that correct? I mean, to what extent is all of this, you know, related to the timing and everything else to this upcoming negotiation?
The contract expires the last day in June in about 6 months, and it's all intertwined, pertaining to schedules, health, safety, restroom breaks, adequate recovery time at the end of each terminal. It's all intertwined, interrelated, and it all has to be addressed. It's not just about one specific thing. It's not just about wages. It's not just about schedules. It's not just about hours. It's all intertwined, and it all has to be broken down.
All right, let's read some comments here. Danica writes, if the shortage is that bad, then Muni is doing a pretty decent job adjusting. Respect the drivers. I'm not quite sure what that means. Adjusting seems like maybe the she just feels like the buses are running on time. What do you hear from readers and others about the on-time rates?
Well, what sparked the first stories I did on the kind of the summer meltdown, right, was hearing from different riders that all across the city that their wait times were increasing. I mean, we had a 48-minute waits on the 1BX out from for the Richmond district, 24-minute waits on the 38 Geary, which is bigger. The one bus line is more heavily ridden than all of Caltrain, and it's got over 65,000 daily trips, and those trips were increasingly long. And when we heard this at the Examiner, we're like, well, how is it that all these different bus lines are going bad? And that's when we requested the data for bus lines across the city. This isn't like BART. If BART melts down, you see thousands of people, hundreds of people waiting at stations across the Bay Area. When Muni melts down, it's harder to pinpoint without the data, and that's when we saw this happen. Since the summer, they have increased their on-time performance. They're at 95% on-time performance system-wide, and while that sounds pretty good, their target is 98.5%, and that difference of 3.5 percentage points doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're waiting 40 minutes for a bus on the west side of the city, it's a lot.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and Steve in Livermore, you're next. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm a retired bus mechanic from Denver, and I'll tell you, after 28 years, you see the buses, which are not small and don't maneuver very well, and the aggressive drivers in any large city, it's a tremendous liability for the driver, who may have as little as one passenger or 50, 60 passengers. The liability is tremendously stressful.
Let me ask Paul Rose. I know the city is moving toward creating a lot of these transit-only lanes on Mission Street, Geary, Van Ness. I mean, that should theoretically make it easier to drive and also help with the on-time performance. To what extent is that happening?
Yeah, we've seen significant increases in on-time performance on our rapid lines, and that carries about 70 to 75% of our ridership on a weekday. So where we're seeing some of our heaviest used routes, we have these red transit only lanes going in. We have transit signal priority, which gives buses the green lights more often, and looking at other ways to increase service. And looking at ways to put more buses, which we've replaced our entire fleet of buses. We're putting newer trains out on the street. So that's really having a great impact on service reliability.
And Roger, what would you add to that in terms of the operators? Are they appreciating these transit-only lanes that should clear some of that traffic away? Does that make it less stressful on those lines?
I can answer that question with one word: enforcement. There has to be enforcement. The red carpets or the red lanes are made for public transportation. They are not made for Uber and for Lyft and for scooters and for scoots. They are made for public transportation. So that comment or question can be answered in one word: enforcement.
Paul, what would you add to that? I mean, is the enforcement, have you been asking, has Muni been asking for, MTA been asking for the enforcement? Is it not happening? Is it not a priority?
It is definitely a priority, and it's something that over the last 90 days, we've been working with our parking control unit to provide some traffic support so that our buses and trains can get through traffic faster. That's something that we've just implemented as part of our 90-day plan, and we're hoping to continue going forward.
Joe?
SFPD had not had traffic company classes for a few years, and the number of police on the streets just enforcing traffic has dropped. But they just started some new classes, so the recruitment of traffic officers is going up, and so we can expect to see a little more enforcement on city streets. And one quick correction of my number earlier: 95% of service only in the rapid lines.
Yeah, because I think for the overall, it's more like, I think, is it more like 75-80%?
Not quite that low, but in the commuter kind of the neighborhood lines, which are really vital. Like if you're up in the hills by School of the Arts, High School, for instance, near Twin Peaks, you rely on the 36 Terracita. They're 55% on-time performance. You're not getting your bus out there.
And if I could give just some context on service delivery, to compare what service delivery was during the Twin Peaks project, it was at about 92%. Over the last 90 days, we've got that up to about 95 to 96%. So we're making significant progress, but we've got more work to do, and that's what we're trying to deal with right now is getting more operators into the system, trained and out in the street.
All right, Steve in Livermore, thanks so much for the call. Let's go now to Sanal in San Francisco. Welcome, you're next.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much. I'm a 13-year Muni passenger, and I absolutely love the drivers. They're hyper-focused on making sure that they need to get to from point A to point B. However, it's unacceptable and extremely dangerous, the conditions, especially getting downtown. It's borderline insane. So I want to know what London Breed is going to do as far as Vision Zero and really put money towards paying these people who are indeed teachers and vital, vital community members. They're wonderful people. I've been riding the bus with my infant son, and I see all the elders who rely on the service. These bus drivers are doing a fantastic job. They need to be paid adequately. I want to know what they're going to be doing.
All right. Thanks for the call. And, Joe, of course, the mayor's not here to ask, but I imagine you ask questions like that of both the mayor and other city officials. How big a priority? I mean, we did see a few months ago that the head of the MTA was sort of in the crosshairs, Ed Reskin, for some of the problems with the Twin Peaks Tunnel project.
That's right. You know, Mayor Breed has made Muni a big focus of hers since she's come into office. And she served Ed Reskin with notice. I mean, the rumors were flying that Ed Reskin would, you know, not have his job for too long. She sent a very sternly worded letter to him. Some little inside politics. The MTA board is the only body that can remove Ed Reskin from being the head of Muni. And he has support from the board. But she will make future appointments to that board, so we will see how she deals with those appointments and what she asks them to do in the next year.
Is there some frustration at the Board of Supervisors that they don't have any real control over SFMTA?
Oh, absolutely there's frustration. I mean, we've seen Supervisor Asha Safai, who represents the South Side, kind of like Ingleside, Excelsior parts of San Francisco, even proposed splitting up SFMTA because he suggested it's too big, has too many things on its plate. SFMTA is actually a very unique agency in terms of the country. In other cities, there's a different department that handles the creation of kind of street signage and street changes versus handling the transit agency versus handling the taxis and creating bike lanes. MTA is kind of a grand experiment, rolling them all into one so that they all feed off each other and are kind of intermingled and play off each other.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And again, the number to call is 866-733-6786. And Eric in San Francisco, welcome.
What happened to the Muni drivers? First of all, thank all the Muni drivers for what they do. But what happened to the Muni drivers being the second highest paid drivers in the country? In addition, I don't think they mentioned that the drivers get additional compensation such as run pay. So what is the actual salary for a Muni driver? And then how is Muni addressing the high turnover rate? However many drivers.
Sure. We did talk a little bit about that second highest in the country pay formula. But Paul Rose, what would you add to the retention question? And, also maybe any thoughts about this, upcoming contract when this current one expires at the end of June?
Well, first off with the contract, it's too early to get into the details on that. We'll deal with those specific discussions during negotiations early next year. What I can say is that, we value our operators. They have extremely difficult jobs, and the vast majority are extraordinary at what they do. They have, and Roger touched on it earlier, that driving a huge bus down what can be narrow streets and congestion is very difficult while dealing with the public and making sure people are paying their fares at the fare box. It's very difficult, and we want to do everything we can to ensure that our operators have the resources they need to be successful, safe, and have everything they need to move on.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Eric. Here's some other comments. Jack raises an interesting point. He writes, surely the number of drivers employed by private tech companies for their shuttles is a factor. Get trained by Muni, then take the posh job. To what extent is that happening, Roger, do you think?
It happens quite often. People come here and then they get their Class B license. They leave to go work for, these other companies that pay better, that max out and pay much more quickly. In regards to...
How much better do they pay?
Much better, significantly, to the point at which you just come here to Muni, you get your license, and then you leave because you cannot afford to pay rent at 63% of the base hourly rate and deal with 100% of the crap that's being thrown in front of your face every single day. However, you're only making 63% of the base hourly rate when every other city department is making 80%.
Right. The biggest change to the contract from in 2014 was instead of going up to full pay in a year and a half, like in 18 months, the operators, new operators, take 5 years to get to go up the steps to their full
48 months,
full pay.
48 months.
Yeah. So it's a long haul to get there. And it, you know, a lot of operators are saying, "Oh, we didn't know we were getting into this when we signed up for this."
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. David in San Francisco, you're next.
Yes, I'm a retired operator, and I was on the platform during Prop G, and the operators were attacked mercilessly by the likes of Sean Ellsburn and Scott Weiner and the San Francisco Chronicle, Rachel Carson, and so the. And during my entire 12 years, there was an operator shortage. So this is nothing new. This is a strategy by the city to save money. That's all it is. Recruiting workers is very simple. It's all about wages and benefits. And also training is not rocket science. Same thing. You just need trainers and workers.
All right, David, so, I apologize. We're getting very short on time, but I do appreciate the call. Paul Rose from Muni, going forward, is there any plan to address the problem? And, you know, might we see some hirings increasing, or are these other issues we've talked about and Roger has talked about and Joe going to continue to be a problem?
Well, we anticipate finding a solution. We've already taken steps to recruit more operators. We're going to be doing more online recruitment. We're going to be working with other organizations, including City College, to develop a career pathways for commercial driving. We're going to look for other alternatives that we haven't looked at in the past to get more operators here and on the street.
All right. Well, I think anybody who's either driven in the city themselves or taken a bus can appreciate, Roger, how tough a job it is to maneuver a huge vehicle like a bus through the city of San Francisco. So hats off to you and the guys and women who do that. So, hopefully you'll find a solution to some of these problems for commuters' sake and everyone else.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming in. Roger Marenko is president of the Transport Workers Union, Local 250A. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, a transportation reporter for the San Francisco Examiner. And Paul Rose, a spokesperson for the SFMTA. Thanks to all of you. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Dear Evan Hansen, two cast members will be with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.